I'm telling you this morning about David, who is known as a man after God's own heart. In his sermon on basically the history of Israel to help the people to whom he is speaking to understand or appreciate a little bit more the purpose for which Jesus came, Stephen, or actually Paul in Acts chapter 13, is rehearsing the history of the Jewish nation. There was nothing that could have more captivated a Jewish audience than a rehearsal of their history as a nation of people. They're a very proud people, and Stephen did the same thing back in Acts chapter 7, but he was pointing out, Stephen was, that at various times, the very one that God had chosen was the one that the people had rejected. And now they had rejected Jesus, but Jesus was the very one that God had chosen. And David is Paul here is pointing out that David was the second king, and he was a better king than Saul. Afterward, they asked for a king, talking about the people as they went to Samuel, and in 1 Samuel chapter 8 there, and asked for a king. So God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. Saul was a very humble man to begin with, but his position as king kind of went to his head, and he became a prideful man and took things upon himself that God did not approve of. And so God removed Saul. When he had removed him, he being God, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony, and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. And so there was a great contrast between David and his reign, and Saul and his reign. And so David was a man after God's own heart. That is quite a testimonial. And it's a testimonial from God. David received one of the greatest commendations any man has ever received from God. Well, what made David a man after God's own heart? What was it about David that God could say, here is a man after my own heart? What does that mean? That means David wanted to capture God's heart. He wanted God to love him and approve of him. And so David was one, he was after God's heart. He was seeking to be in a right relationship with God. And so we're going to look at the three things that caused David, at least three things that caused David to be a man after God's own heart. First of all, he was a man who remembered God in his youth. Many of us wasted our youth and did not remember God in our youth. I grew up in a denomination that emphasized wrongly that once you were saved, you were always saved. It doesn't really matter what you do. And so I really wasn't all that concerned about what I did. I thought I was saved. But I did not remember God in my youth. Well, if you had asked me, I would have said I believed in God. But I didn't remember God in my daily life like David did. And we're going to look at some instances of that in a few moments. He remembered God in his youth. He had great faith and trust in God. You know, he had asked me when I was a youth, I would say, well, yeah, I've got a great faith and trust in God, but you would not have seen that faith and trust exhibited or manifested in my life. It's easy for a man to say, I have faith. James talks about that. A man may say, I have faith. Another man will say, I have words. Show me your faith. Show me your works, and I'll show you my faith. I'll show you my faith by my works. And that's what we've got to do, demonstrate our faith by our words. And that's what we saw in David. We saw in David a man of great faith and trust in God, the faith and trust that was manifested in action. And thirdly, he was a spiritually minded individual. David was, I'm not saying he ever sinned. We're going to consider that in just a few moments. But he was a spiritually minded individual. And we're going to specify or look closely at each of these in turn. First of all, David remembered God in his youth. You might not remember, but hopefully you remember that David was a shepherd boy. He remembered God in his youth. Those who remember God in their youth will be more likely to remember him in old age. Now, it's never too late to start remembering God. If your youth is past and you're no longer in your youth, that doesn't mean you shouldn't start remembering God. But a young person should start remembering God. If a person can start remembering God in his daily activities as a youth, then certainly he'll be more likely to remember him in old age. Over in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, the writer says, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come, and the years draw near, when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.' While the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain." And so, the habits that we develop in our youth will determine our course of life as adults. The sooner we develop good habits, clean habits, spiritual habits, habits that involve the worship and service of God, worshiping God and serving Him, then the sooner we can develop those habits, then the more likely we will be a servant of God in our old age. Some people wait, not necessarily too late, but they wait till a time when it's more difficult to form those good habits. The difficult days come. We become set in our ways. Oftentimes, we become set in our ungodly ways. We become set in our unrighteous ways. And we want to keep doing the things that we are doing. We want to keep being what we are. And so it becomes more and more difficult to repent of sin the older you get. And so the best thing to do is to realize, as a youth, that I need to do what's right. I need to quit doing the things that I'm doing that are wrong. I need to remember my Creator in the days of my youth, before those difficult days come and the years draw nigh, when I say I have no pleasure in them. And so that was David. He did remember the Creator in the days of his youth. And several things, of course, contributed to that. His parents obviously taught him about God. His father was Jesse. He had six or seven older brothers. I'm not sure the exact number. He was the youngest, though, of several children. But he was taught about God. He was taught about his godly responsibilities. Even the responsibility to tend to his father's sheep, he took seriously. And he guarded those sheep with his life. In only two instances, the sheep were threatened by first a bear and then a lion, or in some order, a lion and a bear. And David stood up to the lion, and he stood up to the bear, because he had a responsibility toward those sheep. He took his responsibility seriously because he remembered God in his youth. His parents obviously taught him about God. If we fail to teach our children and grandchildren about God, we cannot blame them overly much if they do not remember God in their youth. If we never teach them about God, they're not going to think much about God. I was watching a movie on Netflix this morning. I didn't get to watch it all because of the time, but Lee Strobel is a man who was an atheist as he was growing up. The existence of God was not a thing that was emphasized by his parents. By the time he met the woman he married, he was a devout atheist. He was very antagonistic towards the very idea of God. He was antagonistic towards the very idea of religion. His wife, though not spiritually minded, not religious, she was nevertheless not antagonistic against it. She was more of an agnostic, whereas he was more of an atheist. But eventually she became somewhat spiritually minded. She began attending a church, and this caused him to small amount of consternation. He didn't like that, because that made him look bad if his wife all of a sudden decides she's been religious. This is not what he was planning on in their marriage. Actually, he was just going to rock her foundation. He was going to dynamite the foundation out from under organized religion. He was going to study and prove to her satisfaction that the Bible was not inspired by God, not even a good book, and that one should not practice the religion period, much less a religion based upon the Bible. He wasn't talking about God. But as he began to study, he began to change his thoughts and his thinking. And eventually became a believer in God and a believer in Jesus Christ. And so that's interesting. But his parents didn't teach him about God. David was anointed king while he was still a young man. He was so young it never occurred to either his father or his mother or even to the prophet Samuel that he might be the one that would be anointed king instead of Saul. And when Samuel was told to go to see Jesse and I'll tell you the one that will be anointed king, Jesse had several big scrappling young men as sons and they were brought before Samuel one at a time, and each time God said to Samuel, oh, this is not the one. Finally, the last one came and God said, this is not the one, or what they thought was the last one, what Samuel thought was the last one. And Samuel said to Jesse, don't you have any other sons? God just said, no, these ones, you must have another son. Well, he had heard David, but he's out there in the field watching over the sheep. He's just a little old shepherd boy. And Samuel was a sin boy. And so when David came, God said to Samuel, this is the man. Because God doesn't look on the outward man, God looks on the inward man. And David was head and shoulders above his bigger and older brother, spiritually speaking. He was still a young man. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy. But he had a reddish complexion with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is the one. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel arose and went to Ramah. And so Samuel's mission was accomplished. This, by the way, was a secret mission because Saul was still on the throne. And it was several years before Saul would actually be about to be killed. Several years before David actually would ascend to the throne that he's anointed here in anticipation of that time when Saul is killed in the providence of God, and it's time for David then to ascend to the throne. But David bided his time. David was a man who remembered God, and all that time he never took it upon himself to take that throne. He remembered God. Well, when God gets ready for me to ascend to the throne, I'll ascend to the throne. That I'm not going to take the throne from the man who was anointed king before me. That was David's attitude. Why? He was a man after God's own heart. He was a man to remember God in his youth. Also, rather than sowing their wild oats, the young should flee youthful lusts. A lot of times you hear people say, well, you know, he's still young. Let him sow his wild oats. Let him go out there and experience all that life has to offer. Let him go out there and reach for the gusto. Because, you know, your youth is over soon. That's true. Your youth is over soon. But what happens if a man's life is over before his youth is over? He's out there throwing his wild oats. And he's killed in a tragic accident. Or perhaps he's killed while in violation of the law. Because he's out there with a group of people that don't remember God, and he doesn't remember God either. One's life can be cut short. And one needs to be remembering God whenever his life comes to an end, whether he's a young person or an older person. 2 Timothy 2, verse 22, flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. You can't start too early pursuing righteousness, faith, love, and peace. Just as soon as you realize that you have a responsibility before God, you need to start pursuing faith, righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of pure heart. Remember God and the days of your youth, and you'll be more likely than not to be a man after God's own heart. Not only did he remember God in his youth, but also he had great faith and trust in Jehovah. It's all well and good if an individual remembers God in his youth, but if he does not have great faith and trust in Jehovah, he'll not be a man after God's own heart. He'll be headed in the right direction if he remembers God in his youth. But he's not there yet if he doesn't yet have great faith and trust in Jehovah. Well, how was David's great faith and trust in Jehovah manifested? Well, he had great faith and trust in Jehovah to physically deliver him in battle against Goliath. Now, here is David already having been anointed as king. He knows he's going to be king one of these days. In the providence of God, whenever God is ready, he knows he's going to be anointed as king. He goes to take his brother some food, cheeses, probably some meat, some things to eat. That was in a day when each man had to pretty much provide for himself. It wasn't provided for by the nation that he served in the army. But he was taking some supplies and some foodstuffs to his brothers who were in the army. And he heard about this Goliath, this 9-foot giant, who was challenging all of Israel and said, "Send out your champion and I'll fight him. And if he beats me, then we'll leave y'all alone. But if I beat him, you'll be subject to us, all of you." But every one of them was shaking in their boots, even Saul, King Saul, shaking in his boots, afraid to go out and face this 9-foot giant. And keep in mind, this is in a day when probably 5'6" would have been tall. David, in all likelihood, was shorter than Spud Webb, who was one of the shortest NBA basketball players in the world. And Goliath was probably taller than Luke Bolt, one of the tallest NBA basketball players in the world. And yet David was not feared. He trusted God to deliver him physically in battle against Goliath. Well, how do we know that? Well, in the text of 1 Samuel here, "Moreover, David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.'" David knew and understood that there was something that the nation of Israel needed to do. The nation of Israel needed to produce the Messiah, the one who would come and bless all nations, the one who would come and set up a kingdom which would not ever be destroyed. David understood, he probably did understand if he knew that, if he knew about the prophecy of Jacob at the end of the book of Genesis, that the scepter should not depart from Judah till Shiloh come. He knew that the tribe of Judah would be the priestly tribe, or the kingly tribe, the royal tribe. He knew that Israel was God's people, and Israel needed to survive. It was necessary in God's great scheme of things for Israel to survive. And so he knew that Israel was not going to be defeated, whoever went out as the champion. And if nobody else was going to go out, David was going to go out. Just as he fought off the lion, he fought off the bear, who were trying to molest the sheep, trying to kill and eat the sheep. God would deliver him from the hand of this Philistine, this Goliath. And so Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." 1 Samuel 17:37. Not only did he have great faith and trust in Jehovah to physically deliver him in battle against Goliath, but he also had great faith and trust in Jehovah to provide his spiritual needs. David was one who realized that man would not live by bread alone. That man was a physical creature, but he was also a spiritual being. He had spiritual needs as well as physical needs. And he had great faith and trust in God to provide him with his spiritual needs. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake." Psalm 23:1-3. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." This is probably much later than God inspired David to record this prayer, but that's the kind of a prayer that was characteristic of David. That's the kind of a person David was. To consider God to be his shepherd. He considered himself to be like a sheep that needed a shepherd. And God was his shepherd. He counted on God to provide for him spiritually, just like a shepherd provides for his sheep physically. And so he trusted in God to provide his spiritual as well as his physical needs. Not only that, he had great faith and trust in God such great faith and trust in God that he refused to kill Saul, though he had means, motive, and opportunity to do so. Rather, he waited on the Lord. What does he mean by means? Well, he had a sword. He knew how to use a sword. Since the time that he killed Goliath with a little smooth stone in a sling, he had been in many fights and had used the sword. He knew how to use the sword. And though he could not use Saul's armor at the time, he had armor since that time, fitted to his own body. He knew how to use armor. David had the means. David had the motive. Not that he wanted to do it. But if Saul had turned up dead, David would have been a suspect. Why? Because he had already been anointed king. He had the opportunity to do so. When Saul was chasing David all over Judah, there were times that David could have killed Saul, and he didn't do it. Because he was waiting on the Lord. He was trusting in the Lord to put him, David, on the throne in due course when God was ready to do that. In 1 Samuel 24, verse 10, David says to Saul, "Look this day. This day your eyes have seen, but the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my I spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against the Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed." Here Saul was trying to kill David. David sneaks into the cave with some of his old soldiers. They help old Saul, who is lying there asleep, and his soldiers say, "Well, kill him now, you can't kill him. He would kill you in this circumstance." But David refuses and says, "No. As long as he lives, he is the Lord's anointed. He is the one who God anointed to be king before me, and I will not ascend to the throne as long as he lives, because he is the Lord's anointed." That was David's attitude. He was trusting in God to provide the throne, or provide the means by which David himself would ascend to the throne. So he had great faith and trust in Jehovah, as well as remembering God in his youth. But he was also a spiritually minded individual. A person can fool himself into thinking he has great faith and trust in Jehovah, and fool other people into thinking that, but if he's not spiritually minded, he doesn't really have great faith and trust in Jehovah. But David was spiritually minded. He was minded about things of the Spirit. He prayed often. I'm not saying he never sinned. We'll talk about that in a moment. He prayed often. He prayed God often. Many of his psalms were prayers. And we don't know what these prayers were prayed by him even before he was inspired to write them down. But he was truly penitent when he realized the enormity of his sin. You know, it's one thing to sin. It's another thing to recognize the enormity of your sin. It's one thing to know that you've sinned, but not recognize the enormity of the sin. What do I mean by that? It is a bad thing to sin against God. And many of us are late in realizing how bad a thing it is to sin against God. And we want to excuse ourselves. Well, if he hadn't tempted me, if he hadn't allowed me to be tempted. Well, we're told in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 13, that no temptation has taken a man but what's common, and God will not allow us to be tempted above that which we're able, but we're with the temptation, make also the way of escape. So we cannot excuse him by saying, "Well, you allowed him to be tempted." Because just as God put a limit on what Satan can do to Job, he'll put a limit on what Satan can do to you and to me. And he won't allow Satan to tempt us beyond what we are able to bear. Whether we bear it or not is up to us. David was truly penitent when he realized the enormity of his sin where Bathsheba was concerned. The Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and said to him, "There were two men in one city, one rich and another poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb which he had brought up and nursed, and it grew up together with him and with his children. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in his bosom, and it was like a daughter to him." Already I can see David identifying with this poor man. David, who had been a shepherd in his youth, knew what it was like to be out there with the sheep and to form those close relationships with those animals. You know, he loved those sheep when they stood up to a bear, and he stood up to a lion to protect them. He could identify with this poor man. And this sheep was like a daughter, too. And a traveler came to the rich man and refused to take from his own flock and from his own herd to prepare one for the wayfaring man who comes to it. But it's just the poor man's land and prepared it from the man who comes to it. Now this didn't really happen. This is a parable that Nathan, the prophet of God, is telling David, and a parable is something to communicate spiritual truth. It is a lesson from this material world cast alongside on something in the spiritual realm to help somebody get a spiritual message. Nathan is not telling David a real event. But David thinks that this is a real event. David identifies with this poor man, and David sees red in this. David's anger was greatly aroused against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man who has done this shall surely die, and he shall restore fourfold to the land because he did this thing and because he has no peace." And what might that be? How can he restore fourfold to the land if he's dead? Well, they can take it out of his bank account. They can take it out of his estate. Or they can make him pay it before he dies. David identifies with the poor man and he's pronouncing judgment against the rich man. He said, here's what's going to happen to that man for doing that to that poor man with that one little ewe lamb. So then Nathan said to David, "You are the man. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel, I delivered you from the hand of Saul, I gave you your master's house and your master's wives and your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah, and if that had been too little, I also would have given you much more." And he's talking about what God is talking about, what he did providentially for them. Jesus points out in Matthew chapter 19 that from the beginning, God's intention was for one man to have one wife and to have her for life. That was God's intention. But God tolerated plural wives. He tolerated divorce during the time of the law of Moses. He does not tolerate those things. And so Jesus said, except the man, whoever puts away his wife and accepts me for fornication and marries another, he commits adultery. Whoever marries her that is put away commits adultery. God does not tolerate it now. But God, when David became king, he inherited Saul's harem, as it were. Those wives became David's wives. In addition to Saul's daughter, who became David's wife. And he gave him the house of Israel and Judah. At first, David was just king over Judah. For three and a half years, then he became king over all of Israel. Well, God has done that. God said, if that had been too little, I would have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife. And have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Now David remembered God in his youth. There were times in his adult life when he forgot God. He sinned against God when he took Bathsheba, another man's wife. And she became pregnant as a result. David first of all tried to cover that up by having Uriah come home and he had a feast with him and said, go down and be with your wife, hoping that, later when she was with child, that Uriah did come home from, that little 2 or 3 days there. Uriah would go into his house. It wasn't right for him to be with his wife when his men were still out there in the battle. So the next night, David got him drunk, hoping that he would lose his inhibitions and forget about those men out here in battle and go and be with his wife. And he still would not do that. So David then handed Uriah a note. I want you to give this the gentleman, Joab, the general. And the note said, I want you to put Uriah in the heat of the battle and withdraw from him. Now, David knew that Uriah would not read that note. Uriah did not read that note. He gave that note to Joab, to the general. And the general put him in the hardest fight and withdrew from him. And he was killed. And when the news bearer was to go back and tell David that we lost this battle, Joab said, the first thing you need to tell him is that Uriah the Hittite was killed. And he won't take the news nearly as badly as he might otherwise. And so David found out Uriah was killed and Bathsheba was a widow. David went and married her, and then they can always say that the baby was a little premature. But that's what God is talking about. You have killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife. You have killed him with a sword to the people of Ammon. David killed him just as if he had taken the sword himself and stabbed him or slashed him. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. David had all kinds of trouble with his sons. One of his sons, Amnon, raised his half-sister, Tamar. Tamar's whole brother, Absalom, avenged her by throwing a party for Amnon and then killing him. And then Absalom later rebelled against David, would have taken the kingdom. God was not willing for that to happen. David was not literally fighting against Absalom. David vacated the city of Jerusalem to avoid having to kill his own son Absalom. And when his son Absalom, who had long flowing hair, was riding through the forest, his hair caught the branches of a tree, and he was hanging there helpless, and Joab came along and killed him against David's wishes. And David cried, Absalom, Absalom, oh my son Absalom. Well, that was brought upon David because of David's sin, you see. The sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord. Behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor. When Absalom came in and took Jerusalem after David had vacated, he publicly went into the tent of David's concubine to humiliate David. And that's what God is talking about. That's what God is talking about. Take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor. That was Absalom. And he shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son, for you did it secretly, but I was in this thing before all Israel, before the sun. Now David was not put to death for his adultery, but David suffered punishment because of that. Providentially. So David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Had he sinned against Uriah the Hittite? Well, yes. Had he sinned against Bathsheba? Yes. He had sinned against a lot of people. He had sinned against Joab by giving Joab a part in that. But primarily, he had sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, the Lord also has put away your sin, you shall not die. However, because by this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also who is born to you shall surely die. So all kinds of turmoil in the house of David followed this because of that, and the child died that was born to Bathsheba at that time, and then later she bore Solomon, who became the next king of Israel. But that first child died. So he was truly penitent when he realized the enormity of his sin. It took that parable to realize that. And he sacrificed willingly unto the Lord. And 2 Samuel 24:24, when David is told that ordinarily it would not be David's place and without being commanded by God specifically, he would be wrong in doing it, but he was told by God to offer this sacrifice. And then the king said to Araunah, "Know that I will surely buy it from you for a price." David wanted to buy a bull from Araunah, this man named Araunah. And the custom was, when somebody asked to buy something, you would make a gift. You would make a gift of it. No, I'm just giving it. David said, "No, I'm going to buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God, that would cost me nothing." What kind of sacrifice would it be if it didn't cost David anything? So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. He didn't just buy the oxen to sacrifice. He bought the threshing floor as the place of sacrifice. And so, that was the kind of a person that David